Hello, hello. It is Friday.
Yeah, and I guess the headline today is that Google's made by Google lineup is starting to come into view now.
Definitely. It's par for the course doing in terms of when everything starts coming out. This is we're decidedly halfway into the year, and plans start to finalize if companies want to start shipping by the end of the year.
Yeah, I think plans for Google's products this fall are probably already finalized. I can't say why I know that or why I think that, but I'm pretty confident they are already established. I mean, I think in the industry it's pretty standard that things would be established by this point, but obviously with the current state of things in the world, I think that's kind of the cliche that I'm hearing in like every podcast, the beginning of every episode of every podcast I've listened to in the last few months is there's just this like obligatory reference to the state of affairs. You know, it's kind of like this vague nod to the fact that, you know, things aren't normal in our lives right now. And that's affecting everything, including Google. And I think the most foremost example of that is the Pixel 4a. We can't say for sure that the Pixel 4a's launch has been delayed purely because of COVID-19, but it seems pretty likely that it's played a part. I don't know, like do we have solid information that would have suggested that it was planned to launch in May, other than the fact that that would have been following the annual cycle of the Pixel 3a? Is that
yeah, it's
bulk of the assumption?
Absolutely, it's at the annual cycle, and it's if Google it the last year, it really did seem that Google is starting to solidify how they launch products. Like a sign of a maturing hardware division is that you can do more than one major product launch in a year. And for Google, it really did seem like a natural timeline was going to be I/O. And another thing, I believe at the end of last year, Rick Ostro said something along the lines of we're not going to have any major product launches until I/O or something like that. I forgot what that was a reference to, but it's basically the idea that that I/O was the natural event to announce things.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about this many times on the show, but I/O for the longest time was an obvious venue for Google to announce hardware, and they went a few years, I think between 2015 or 2016 and 2018, where they didn't talk about hardware hardly at all at Google I/O, and in fact they also toned down some of the hardware giveaways too, and so yeah, I mean, it seemed like for a while that they weren't going to make hardware the center focus of I/O. And then that all last year that kind of got turned on its head with the introduction of the Nest Hub Max and the Pixel 3a. And so I think after that, a lot of people assumed, okay, Google hardware, you know, after doing their annual fall events are now taking this opportunity for this second venue to show off different hardware products, which makes sense. And it seems like that might've most likely would have been the plan this year, especially given, you know, 1 year timeline from the launch of the 3A would have made perfect sense for the 4A. But I guess we can start off the show. Thank you, by the way, to everyone who's joined us. We're really glad to be back, and I'm glad to be back. The show hasn't really stopped, but I tend to not come on unless I have something of value to offer. And this week, thankfully, I did. I had a purpose in my job as managing editor of 9to5 Google. And I wrote about this Nest speaker. But before we jump into this upcoming Nest hardware product that we exclusively detailed earlier this week, let's talk a little bit about Pixel 4a, and maybe a little bit about Pixel 5. First of all, there's been some rumors, notably John Prosser on Twitter. He has dropped some little tidbits he's hearing from his sources. Apparently, he has a couple sources. I don't want to speak to the nature of his sources. I don't know the nature of his sources, but I would guess that he has at least one person who seems to know at least something about the Google Pixel launch timeline, because after he tweeted this very, very, very weird timeline rumor for the Pixel 4a, we're now hearing from an anonymous source that what he said is essentially true. So as a recap, basically what John said was that the Pixel 4a would be announced at some point in mid-July, and then weirdly enough, it's going to go, 3-4 months between announcement and actual retail launch. Okay. That was the gist of what John previously speculated, and we're hearing that that's actually the case. I mean, we don't have that on solid enough ground to do our own report detailing that as an exclusive. I mean, especially since, you know, apparently John beat us to that, so we're not going to do that. But we are corroborating that on the show today that we are hearing at least from one anonymous source. Who has, you know, a mixed track record, but enough of a track record for us to have to take it seriously. That's the case, that the Pixel 4a will be launched or announced in mid-July and then launched alongside the other major Pixel launch for the year, which is going to be the Pixel 5. And we are already getting some questions in the comments section over on YouTube. Please do drop us some questions about anything we talk about today. We'll be sure to address as many of them as we can. But one person asks, will the Pixel 5 still be launched in October? And we can say with a pretty decent amount of confidence that seems to be the case. Pixel 5, according to our anonymous source, is looking at a launch sometime around early October or late September, and will be released to retail stores around the same time as the Pixel 4a. So yeah, I mean, that's kind of what we have for now on the Pixel 4a, Pixel 5 timelines. Is there anything, I don't know, that's kind of, it's
the why
Pixel 4a. Yeah, why I mean, it's not surprising for Pixel 5. It pretty much follows the annual TikTok cycle of the Pixel launches. But what about Pixel 4a? Why do you have any thoughts for why they might be doing this, if assuming they are doing this?
So the most obvious one that comes to mind is that the Pixel, the device assumed to be the Pixel 4a, is somehow will be rebranded into this Pixel 5 family that Google believes that has a stronger message if it announces a mid-range phone and a slightly more mid-range phone with the Pixel 5, if rumors about the processor choice pan out, and we assume they will. But the idea of having a family of devices might be more appealing to Google. My biggest opposition to that is that these devices are targeting different people, and I don't know if they, because they couldn't launch the Pixel 4a in May like they originally they did last year with the 3a, and therefore it's only a few by June, it's too late to announce and release without people wondering and waiting for the Pixel 5. That could be a possibility on why. But yeah, the timing is, maybe they just lost their launch window with the Pixel 4a as is.
Yeah, I mean, to me, the fact that they are going, I mean, if they are going to do this, if our anonymous source is right that they are launching or announcing the Pixel 4a in July, to me that suggests, I don't know, this just doesn't make sense to me. To me, that suggests that they aren't going to rebrand the Pixel 4a as part of the Pixel 5 lineup, because if they were going to do that, wouldn't they wait to announce the, you know, the low end and the mid tier models side by side at the Pixel 5 event? I just don't get why they would want to announce the Pixel 4a 4 months before shipping it. That just seems weird to me. I mean, other than the fact that, I mean, let's say the only thing I can think of is that it's leaked completely, just like every other Pixel phone has, months in advance, and it clearly wasn't originally intended to launch in the spring. So maybe the announcement is kind of just in admitting that. I don't know. It's odd.
So at a high level, and what's your gut feeling on whether this called a delay is intentional, or is it by circumstances forcing them to do with such delay?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it would have made a lot more sense for them to launch the phone at least in the same part of the year as the iPhone SE. It seemed like that was, you know, going to be a beneficial idea and for multiple reasons. I mean, I think with the possibility that Google is going to launch the 128 gig model at a price that's lower than the entry level 64 gig model, the iPhone SE, there was an opportunity there to really be the value proposition to hold up. But also, I think that there was a really big opportunity there from a PR perspective to just, if they had launched it at the same time, there just would have been such strong association, you know, like every article that talked about the iPhone SE would have been talking about the Pixel 4a, because it would have been unavoidable to talk about one without the other. And now the iPhone SE is yesterday's news, and, or, you know, it's 2 months ago's news. So it's kind of like,
do you think they got upstaged by the SE? And,
well, I mean, either, yeah, they did, and they did.
They did get upstaged. Yeah. Did they get upstaged to the point where they thought that there's no point in launching a phone and then wasting some call?
I don't think so, for multiple reasons. I don't think that Google is, I mean, in what ways was it really upstaged? I mean, really the processing power is what it boils down to. I mean, I don't think that Google is really all too concerned with being embarrassed when it comes to CPU benchmarks. I just don't think that's their primary concern.
Absolutely.
It definitely would have, you know, if articles were run comparing the Geekbench scores of the iPhone SE and the Pixel 4a, it would have made the Pixel 4a look really bad. But I just don't think that was even in the realm of being a major concern. So yes, they did get upstaged in the sense that, you know, the iPhone SE stole the thunder for that, you know, that headline of, is this the new best phone that you can buy under $400, or like, you know, the narrative of, you don't need to buy an expensive phone, this phone is good enough, you know, for those people. Like the iPhone SE definitely stole all those headlines and ran away with them. But I don't think Google was surprised. I don't think that they were like shocked. I mean, Ming-Chi Kuo had been talking about that Apple doing an iPhone SE for years, or at least a year. And so I don't think that Google really sees it that way. I think it's more likely that the circumstances of COVID-19 and the circumstances of, you know, all the political unrest and the social unrest and the protests and just everything that's going on. I mean, we saw that the Android 11 event was basically canceled because of those things. And I think Google's being particularly cautious about how they look in the context of all these major world events. And I think maybe more so than other companies are. And so, yeah, I think that, you know, there's going to be now this comparison between the 4A and the 5, which is to me really weird. It feels like the reverse, right? Like the ideal scenario would have been that they were compared side by side with the iPhone SE. The worst case scenario is that they cannibalize Pixel 5 sales by launching a 4A.
Yeah, that's at the same time. That's the biggest problem here. And maybe they have market research that shows that people buying flagship phones won't flagship quote unquote phones will want a mid-ranger, or maybe they have something along those lines where they're confident there's no cannibalization occurring, or there's some or they priced it as differently enough or whatever the case is. But it's I don't know. I've seen a lot of people with the Pixel 4 like the Pixel 3a for whatever reason, for better battery, for headphone jack. So I hope they plan this out and they know what they're doing in terms of self-cannibalization.
Yeah, what do you think? I mean, let's, again, we're operating under the assumption that our tipster and John source is right, that they are launching it in the middle of next month and then shipping it in October. Let's assume that's true. Are they going to start taking pre-orders in July?
Yeah. The wait is unprecedented. Look at people waiting.
I'm inclined to think that it's wrong.
Yeah, maybe it's like some market. Maybe we're seeing a repeat of the Pixel Buds, where the Pixel Buds launched in the U.S. first, and other countries are waiting, as many commenters are complaining. But it really doesn't make sense. It's not how you sell a phone, because it gives the opportunity for other people to launch and compare against the Pixel 4a. OnePlus is rumored to be readying their mid-ranger. In my mind, if they wanted to just announce a phone now, it would be to encourage people to wait it out. But at this point, it's really, they're not doing themselves any favors here.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's more likely that just both our anonymous tipster and John's sources are both wrong, and it's going to launch and ship in July. I feel like that's more likely.
Yeah.
4 months is enough time between the 4A and the 5 for it to not feel like, you know.
Yeah, like
you're close together.
Yeah, but when it's side by side, it's I don't know. Yeah, I really don't know the reasoning for this, why there's such a wait. And to your question about whether they're going to open up pre-orders, are they going to announce that with the date, with the rumored that these phones are actually going to launch side by side? Is Google going to say the phone is launching in October? Or are they going to be coy and say it's launching later this year? Because that would be a total, the vagaries of that would be not logical.
Yeah. And I mean, that's been done before with many devices. But they're usually really, really big blockbuster device. You know, like, I think of
The Apple Watch.
The Apple Watch is, the first one that comes to mind. There's multiple of these, but, you know, announcements in advance to, one, minimize leaks, two, control more of the narrative, three, to start to introduce the idea of the product to the public before it's actually available, four, to build hype. I mean, there's plenty of reasons to do it for certain products, but I just don't see the Pixel 4a of all things being one of those products. Unless there's something amazing about it that we don't know, unless they're going to announce it and say that, you know, Google's subsidizing the price of it for everyone, they're going to sell it for $99 or something like that. I don't know. Unless there's something crazy that we don't know about, I just don't understand.
Yeah, there needs to be.
Or yeah, I mean, another example. One of the people just commented in our YouTube live stream comments. They said, You mean like the Pixel Buds?
Yeah.
Which is like, yeah, a similar thing where it's like, there was nothing about the Pixel Buds that was, I don't know, like groundbreaking. It was just that was the venue, right? Like Google wasn't going to have another opportunity until I/O. And so they had to take the opportunity that they had to announce it alongside these other products rather than drop a press release randomly, which is what they're going to end up doing with the 4A, it looks like.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Do you think they're going to acknowledge a reason for why there's going to be such a delay? Because we, the press, and other fans of their products are going to be asking. It's what is a good answer to why we're waiting so long to, after announcing a product, to actually start selling it?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe there's something about July 15th as well that we also don't know yet. I can't imagine what, but I don't know. What if Google decided to do a live stream IO and go over, I don't know, like go over everything that they already announced? I don't know.
Oh, man.
I don't know. Maybe there's something about July 15th that's happening that we don't know about yet that would make it add up a little bit more. I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's where we'll leave it on that. I'll address this question now. I feel like it's just a good segue. Someone dropped the question, and it's a good one. What are your current predictions for the Made by Google event this year? So I kind of tweeted about this week. It after I posted my story about the Nest speaker, things are starting to come into view, and it was about this time last year that things started to come into view as well. It looks like we're going to get the Pixel 4a in, you know, at some point, as we just talked about, we're going to get the Pixel 5. There is in fact a Nest branded, dongle of sorts that runs Android TV, which I tweeted, one of my sources suggested to me that it might be renamed Google TV, which is, that's a whole thing, which is, comical Google's whole branding scenario situations, going from Google TV originally to Android TV and now mount back to Google TV. And then there's also this new product, which is what I guess we can go into now, which is this Nest speaker. And this is, I didn't want to call it this in the headline, but it seems like the spiritual successor to the original Google Home. For those that don't know, Google just recently, this week or last week,
a few weeks ago,
time's flying. They recently basically delisted the original Google Home from the Google Store, so it's not available for purchase anymore. And that would make the Google Home Max the last of the Google Homes that are branded Google Home that are still available for purchase on the Google Store.
Well, the Home Mini, but nobody knows why that's still the...
Yeah, we still don't know why that's still up there.
Just how many are they sitting
on? SEO. I'm just going to go with SEO.
Okay.
But anyways, this product is basically the spiritual successor to the original Google Home, it seems like. We don't know exactly what it's going to be called, but we do know it's codenamed Prince. As people who have followed our coverage and just the general Android space over the last 5 years know, all of Google's Google Home products, basically their smart speakers or their deviations of smart speakers, are, I don't know if that's right, no, derivatives, any of their smart speakers or offshoots of smart speakers are all named after famous musicians. I remember going back, we had Joplin, we had Hendrix, which was the Chromecast audio, we had... there's so many of them. I can't remember them off. Remember any of them off the top of your head?
I just remember Joplin for the Home Mini.
Yeah.
What was the Home Max? We should know this. We of all people should know this.
Oh yeah. I had the original scoop on this, and I don't remember what the
Biggie.
That's right. Biggie Smalls. That's right. And Biggie made perfect sense for that one.
Absolutely.
And yes, there's been many, many others, because I think the Nest Hubs both had their names too. But this one's codenamed Prince after Prince. And it, as I reported, I'm just basically going to read out my report. It has a very similar fabric-based design language to the Nest Mini, Nest Hub, and the Google Home Max. And basically what I was trying to do in my article was draw a comparison between or a distinction, I should say, between the Google Home, the original Google Home that launched in 2016, and then this other generation of homes, the original Google Home Mini, the Nest Hub, and then the Google Home Max, which kind of, I don't know, I felt like moved more toward a fabric-centric design.
Yeah.
Rather than the original Google Home, which was more like a plastic air freshener. And so basically we're saying this new speaker is more in line with the new stuff than the original Google Home. So don't expect a redo of the air freshener. And we also mentioned that in terms of the speakers, we are told that this is pretty much in line with the Sonos One, which for those who don't know is a Sonos speaker. By the way, Sonos is suing Google, but that's a whole other conversation. I'm sure they love the fact that I'm drawing these comparisons in my articles. But yeah, the Sonos One is $199 and it's available from Sonos, and I think it has one major woofer speaker driver, 4-inch, and then another tweeter, I'm pretty sure, which is basically, I don't know if you remember, but I compared the Sonos 5 to the Google Home Max way back in, what was it, 2017, when I was writing about that speaker. I made a very similar comparison, which I'm also sure that Google loved at the time. Basically, the headline of the article is basically Google is launching a Sonos 5. And that obviously turned out to be true. You know, it was $400 and it had two woofers, two tweeters. It's pretty monster speaker. I don't think they've sold many units. I have not seen one in person besides the one that I own. It's a great speaker though. But anyways, Prince is basically a Sonos One, which for those who don't know, Sonos One versus Sonos 5 is basically half of a Sonos 5. So the Sonos One has basically just half the drivers, but it's just very similar in quality and performance. So that would put Prince, this Google Home, somewhere between the original Google Home, which had one small 2-inch driver and then other, you know, just natural amplifiers. And then the Google Home Max, which obviously had four drivers, I think. So this device is definitely better in terms of performance, speaker performance, than the Google Home Mini. By a long shot, it's better than the original Google Home by a long shot. It's better than the original Nest Hub by a long shot. It's probably better than the Nest Hub Max, or if not, I would say it's probably similar. I'm not sure exactly on the status of the Nest Home Max speakers, because I've actually never used a Nest Hub Max, except for the one that I checked out at Google I.O. last year. I don't have one. But I would say it's probably in the same realm as the Nest Hub Max, maybe a little bit better, maybe closer to the Home Max. And because of that, I mean, I would guess that I didn't mention this in the article, but I tweeted this after I wrote it. To me, it seems like the Google Home Max is going to get retired because it's now 3 years old, and I'm sure they're not pushing that many units, and it's probably just, I don't know, it's probably just ready to go. And it looks like the original Google Home is also ready to go. And it, to me, it feels like this is kind of the halfway point, and it's probably going to be closer in price to the Google Home than the Home Max. And so I just don't see a reason for the Home Max to exist, because the Home Max is $400. Let's assume this one is the same price as the Sonos One. That's $200. Well, I'll say the Home Max is not actually $400 anymore. It was originally retailed to $400. What is it now? $300, I think?
It's $300 officially, but it's on discount for $249 right now.
Yeah, so that actually furthers my argument that I think the Home Max is going away. They're pushing out the remaining inventory. To me, this Prince speaker is basically going to be half of a Home Max, which means if this was priced at $199 or $179 and you want the power of the Home Max, what do? You buy two of them and you put them together. You do the stereo pair or whatever, and you've got two. If you want four, you do four. And you connect them all with home audio sharing or whatever that is, whatever that's called. Oh, Google has so many features that I don't even know what they're called. So yeah, that's the Nest branded smart speaker, codename Prince. And that's the last of what we know is coming this year, or what we're pretty confident is coming this year. So what's your take on this thing? Like,
so I'm so some people obviously want speakers instead of smart displays in terms of not having a screen that helps them use less technology, et cetera, et cetera. But at the same time, I am wondering, to be frank, there is probably no market for the Home Max for premium audio in the way that Google competes, in the way that Google makes cheap, affordable devices that help assistant proliferate all over the place. And the Home Max was just opposite to that. So yeah, that going away makes sense. But I guess my question is why somebody would buy this Nest speaker, even if the pricing is close to the original Google Home, and not just get like a Nest, an $89 Nest Hub, or if they just want audio, a Nest Mini, which Google said is, which is considerably, noticeably louder than the original Home Mini. I'm trying to imagine how it fits between how this Nest branded speaker fits between the Nest Mini and the Nest Hub. Is there still a demand for audio, for just an audio-only device in an age where it's clear that assistant is so much more useful when it's accompanied by display?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if the dichotomy that you're drawing really exists. I just think that there's different needs, and I agree with you for sure that the screen on the hub, on the Nest Hub and the Hub Max, is definitely a huge addition when it comes to adding functionality, assistant functionality, and just general usefulness for sure. But I think that people buy these products for different reasons, right? Like, you know, as a homeowner now myself, I can imagine why someone might, I mean, I've even found, I use my Home Max in the dining room because it is great to have in there for when I want to, I'll just tell you this. I have a Nest Hub in the kitchen, and I use that all the time for for cooking timers and recipes and all that jazz. And for a photo frame, it's just a great photo frame. And so, you know, we're in the kitchen all the time, we cook all the time. So having that photo frame and all that cooking stuff is just great. I keep the Home Max in the dining room, and whenever I'm listening to music, I always cast my music from my phone to the Home Max, because the Home Max's speakers are just, I mean, if you own a Nest Hub and a Home Max, you will eventually refuse to play music on the Nest Hub, because if you own a Home Max, you realize how crappy the speakers are on the Nest Hub. You don't realize that unless you own both, right? Because, you know, in comparison to your phone, obviously the Nest Hub speakers, even if you have the small Nest Hub, is way better than the speakers on your phone. And so it's way better. But, you know, if you own a Home Max, then it's like, oh, I'm never going to play music on the Nest Hub because those speakers are trash.
I get that. I totally get that.
So I just think there's different reasons to buy these products, and some people genuinely want the more sound. I will say, though, that this actually furthers your argument. I have the speaker on my Home Max turned off on mute. I have the switch flicked in the back because if I'm standing in the kitchen, I don't want to ever have that scenario, which I've written countless blog posts about this, about how awful Google Assistant is at determining which speaker you're standing closest to. I have both of these speakers in the same room, and it was annoying enough that sometimes the Home Max on the other side of the room would think that I was standing closer to it, when in reality I'm 2 inches away from the Nest Hub. And so I muted that that big speaker. And to me, that furthers your point, because really I don't ever use the Home Max as an assistant device, which is really Google's goal. Google doesn't care about making speakers or selling speaker hardware. They just want to put assistant in everything, which is exactly what you're saying. And so, yeah, to me, it's like the whole Max doesn't need to exist for many reasons. One, the most foremost of which being, I just don't think it makes much sense as a smart speaker. It's nice to have it as a smart speaker, and it is nice to have something that, if you really like the Google aesthetic, which I do, I like the look of the Home Max more than I like the Sonos 5 for sure. It's more homey and comfortable. I like the fabric. But I think when the Nest branded speaker comes out, I think the same thing's going to happen, is I'm going to use it as a speaker, but I'm not really going to have any compelling reason for you or for anyone listening to this podcast why they should get that one and not the Sonos one, because in reality, I'm just using it just like I would a Sonos. So
I think the way I see this Nest branded speaker, I don't see it really as competing against a Sonos or a HomePod or Bose or whatever. I see it competing against the fact that so many people are saturated with smart speakers and speakers, like over the past, I don't know, 3 or 4 years, everybody has a speaker, and I don't know what the value proposition that Google is bringing in offering a new Nest branded speaker. Yes, I see it as a replacement so that they no longer have to sell the whole Max. But I don't know what the upgrade path is, or what for people who already have speakers, or why you should buy one in terms of technological.
I don't see one. I don't think there really is an upgrade path. If there is an upgrade path, it is for someone who's using the original Google Home.
I have
an original Google Home in my bathroom. I don't need a Nest display in my bathroom for any reason whatsoever. So I prefer 95% of my use cases for the Google Home in the bathroom is for playing music while I'm in the shower. That's what I use it for 95% of the time. I have a child coming in August. Whenever the child comes and he is brushing his own teeth, I might use it for a brushing timer or something, that might be a potential use case, but 95% of the stuff is just playing music while I'm in the shower. And so I just don't have any desire to have another screen in my bathroom. I actually would like to minimize screens in general in my life, just down to the most useful one or most necessary ones. I think most people would probably agree with that. And so if the Nest branded speaker is not that much bigger than the original Google Home, the upgrade path there is obvious, because the audio output is going to be so much greater and it's going to sound so much better. Now, if it's twice as big, which it may be, I'm not 100% sure on the physical sizing of this device. If it's twice as big, I don't see it. I'm just going to stick with my original Google Home. For now. But I think, to answer your question about upgrade paths, I think while there might be some scenarios where there's an upgrade path for some people from the original Google Home to this, I think that this product is more about filling that gap of, okay, well, the Google Home's been, it's old and needs to be replaced, and the Google Home Max is old and needs to be replaced and doesn't really have a place in the market, and it's really expensive. This product kind of solves that problem. And also, they need to rebrand these things. They're not going to rebrand. If they're doing the Nest rebrand, that's a side effect bonus that they get to launch this one and put the Nest brand on it and just retire the other two. I think that you're actually right in what you're saying, that I think most people that would get the currently available original Google Home should get the Nest Hub, because the speaker in the currently available Google Home is hardly any better, if better at all, than the Nest Hub. Mm-hmm. There's no reason for that product to exist anymore. However, there is room for something that's better than that audio performance wise, but not quite as expensive and outrageous as the Home Max. And that is where this product sits.
Messaging will be a
20-minute teardown of why this product exists and what it is. Sorry for the verboseness of this. But yeah, we don't know what it'll be priced. It's probably coming at the same time as all the other Made by Google stuff, probably later this year. We can answer a couple questions here. I think it's like this one listener named Home Tech is asking a few things. One, do you think the Nest Hub will get a Gen 2 with a camera and better sound quality similar to Nest Mini 2?
A camera?
No, I don't know if it'll get camera. I think there is going to be a minor spec.
Yes. They're going to innovate and whatnot. And I'm sure they have a more compact design for the small smart display. But my initial opposition was to the idea of a camera. They cleverly excluded a camera as a feature. And I think they would be smart to keep that up from a privacy perspective for the people that really care about that.
Yeah, actually, I don't know if that was intentional or not, but them keeping the camera on the Nest Hub Max worked in their favor for sure, because they avoided any of the controversy, right?
Yeah.
But then the upgraded, more niche product, if someone does want something with a camera that they can do duo calls and such, they have that option.
Yeah, and the camera.
It also gives the Nest Hub Max even more reason to exist.
Yeah, definitely.
rather than just being a larger one. So yeah, I don't think that it's going to have a camera, but I do think that we'll see a revised Nest Hub at some point. Maybe this year. Maybe that's going to be on the docket this year. A slightly updated Nest Hub with some new features. Google went cheap with only two, now three mics. They need more like Amazon Echo, less likely for other speakers to answer. Not sure if I agree with that. I think that this is more of a, I'm not sure how much this has to do with hardware and more to do with whatever software algorithms they're using.
Yeah, their belief in software trumping hardware and allowing them to do more things.
Sure, that might be part of it.
All that jazz.
Yeah. But I've actually tested it. I don't know if people know, but you can actually log into your Google Activity and download the clips of what it's hearing.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually pulled the audio of a home that was halfway across the house behind multiple walls and standing in front of another home that was right in front of me. And you can actually hear how my muffled voice from halfway across the house somehow activated this home and left the other one unactivated. And so that's got to be a case of a bug or a glitch or just a poor algorithm. So that's that. Do you think Qualcomm is still working on a warehouse processor?
We can talk about Fitbit a little.
Yeah, let's not talk about Wear OS, because Wear OS seems like it's in purgatory permanently. Let's talk about Fitbit. That seems to be the next move for Google in wearable space. What happened there this week?
It would be their first move in the, well, yes, they have headphones, but as wearables, as hearables. But anyways, yes, Fitbit. This week we saw code in the Fitbit for Android client that very clearly shows them working on bringing Google Assistant to what we assume is the Versa 2 or some other future smartwatch. So to provide some context here, the Versa 2, announced last September, is Fitbit's first smartwatch with a smart assistant. And they ended up going with Amazon Alexa, but there was a report last year too that said they were talking with Google Assistant with the Google and the Assistant team pre-merger, but also getting Assistant on the Versa 2, but that never materialized. But now, since they're soon to be integrated, made by Google, the Vision, there is clear work on having Assistant be available on the Versa 2 for voice commands and controlling a smart home and simply just being integrated into the Google ecosystem.
Yeah. I don't know. What do you think about Fitbit? Like, what's your big picture feeling on where this is going? Do you think the deal's going to get stopped? I guess that's where we could start.
Yeah, that would make everything else moot. But Compared to the climate in when they announced this in last November, I don't know, like 40% gets stopped, 60% gets allowed is my feeling. And maybe rise
30 last fall.
Yeah, it's the climate for antitrust and Google getting this data is just so, it's not it's from a tech regulation standpoint, it's not promising. But if we were to accept that it does happen, because Google doesn't have an existing fitness presence, which would be under US antitrust theory, would be what allows that deal to happen. Fitbit, I just don't see a lot happening for several years because you can take the HTC acquisition as historical precedent on how integrations work, but I don't see anything materializing because if let's say Google already had, they were working on a smartwatch internally, it would be totally incompatible with what Fitbit is doing with what they just bought, unless this is just an acqui-hire. I don't know how they integrate the product seamlessly, and they would have to maintain Fitbit's products, legacy products, for years and years down the road. So that's another headache. Unless they decide to go with Fitbit as the OS, but then that what happens to their Wear OS partners, where Wear OS is a commercially successful business, I'd assume, giving fashion brands a smartwatch OS. That's another consideration to balance. But yeah, I just don't see any. Right now, I don't know whether Wear OS or Fitbit OS is the OS that survives.
Yeah, and I don't know which OS survives. I think. I agree with you. I think everything's at least a year, two, three, five, 10 away. anything from this materializing into anything that Google launches as part of their hardware lineup. Other than maybe, it looks like Fitbit is continuing with whatever they were developing. So maybe there will be Fitbit products that launch under the Fitbit brand. I mean, I think another precedent for this besides HTC is actually a better one. Maybe would be Nest.
Yes.
Because Nest lived under Google and kind of did their own thing for a while and then split off as an Alphabet company and then did their own thing for a while and then came back under Google and now they're being fully integrated. So maybe we'll see the same thing with Fitbit. Maybe Fitbit will be part of Google and then they'll spin it off as an Alphabet company. And then they'll come back. And in the meantime, they'll develop, half a dozen pretty good products that are, under the Fitbit brand. And by the time they come back, then Google will start rebranding all of their wearables and stuff under the Fitbit brand. Anyway, sorry, that's
the vision. Nobody has shared a vision about how Fitbit works within Google, about Fitbit joining the Google hardware team. That vision hasn't been explained in any blog post and any interview.
No, the only vision that's been expressed is an extremely disingenuous one, which is that Fitbit joining Google will somehow fix Wear OS. that was the original vision, and that just doesn't add up.
Yeah, I was a big advocate for Google buying Fitbit and getting a good fitness platform, etc., etc. But the second that the blog post announcing the deal mentioned Wear OS, it turned me off because...
Whoever's idea that was in PR,
it's a face saving move to their partners, to the people.
Yeah,
it's there's I don't know because maybe I'm spitballing here, but the obvious value in Fitbit is their technological know-how and their fitness platform and those whole statistics, the whole thing. Maybe they get it running on Wear OS because Android is this thing that that runs all their OSs. I don't know. Because products are good, but I don't think anybody has a particular affinity for the Fitbit OS or whatever. especially the smartwatch one.
The other thing that it brings is the actual brand itself, similar to Nest. You know, Fitbit managed to establish itself as a national brand much faster than Google could establish any of their own brands as national brands.
Google Fitbit is going to be a blat. That's going
to be funky. Yeah. I think it's probably going to happen that there will be a line of fitness hardware products. Now they just need to inquire, whatever happened to Nokia Health?
It was sold back to the founders who originally sold it to Nokia, and it's this French. It's saying French. That's basically it.
Okay.
Now Nokia, they had interesting ideas on how to do how to combine analog watches with wearables, and that would have been an interesting future, in my humble opinion.
Yeah, but they also did other things like, I don't know, does Fitbit do like smart scales and like other?
Yes, they do. They do. Yes, the Aria it's cheaper now. They would get some. Yeah, that's a new product for Google to do. I don't know. It's just so messy. Yeah, I know the Nest thing, Google buying Nest was a really big deal in 2015. I don't know. I forgot the date. It had to be before the Alphabet thing, so 2013 maybe. It was a very big deal. But Google didn't make smart home products then. Whereas Google has Google Fit, they have Wear OS, they have the whole app ecosystem there. So it's what's surviving is, I don't know, it would have been, again, maybe Google has all this planned out and once the deal closes they'll publicize it, but the vision is hard to see right now, even for plugged in industry people like us.
Yeah, well, I don't have a good segue for this, but we need to move on to our last topic. And our last topic is, for those that have stuck with us, there's 30 people watching right now. We really appreciate you, and we tend to save some of the best stuff of the show for the end of the show. And so this might be the juiciest thing in the show. And it's a hot button topic.
Messaging is the hot button topic.
Many things. Yeah, there are more than one. There is more than one hot button topic, but this one is messaging. And it's going to, I mean, this little tidbit, it just to preface this is from, just an anonymous tipster who we don't really have, a strong track record for, so take this for what it's worth, which is not much. But basically what we're hearing is that Allo is coming back. As Allo 2, I'm just kidding. Sorry, I had to make a bad joke of some kind. Allo is not coming back.
It's fine.
It's even more interesting. This is Google Messaging or Google Messages or whatever you want to call it. This is about the Messages app, which for many may know it as Messenger, right? Was it called Messenger at some point?
That sounds about right.
Maybe, and then Android Messages, and then just Messages. I don't know. It's had a bunch of names, but it's the default SMS client in Android, and it is the default RCS client, which Google named RCS. Well, they called that feature of the app Chat, which is now really hard and confusing because now Google has another product called Google Chat. I digress. But apparently, we're hearing from this anonymous source, which again, we don't know the trustworthiness of this information, but we're hearing that Google is considering or is already working on for Android 12, which is not launching for another year. And if you want to hear about Android 11, Abner and Kyle and Ben had a good chat about that last week. So go check out the podcast on your favorite podcasting platform and check that out. But Android 12, which is the version of Android we pretty much know nothing about. Next year, Google is considering some way to require new devices to have Google Messages pre-installed for their certification process. And that would mean all new devices would have RCS or Google Chat as default. So that's, I mean, I don't even know how to like to break this down, but it seems like a really big deal, and the kind of rumor that, you know, would, I don't know, just be like pretty crazy.
Yeah, in some ways, this is the most ideal thing that could happen for Google to encourage RCS adoption, to have RCS and maybe Android synonymous with, as this is how you communicate with people. Unless something has changed internally with Google's communication strategy, RCS is how the primary way that Google wants Android users to communicate with each other. So that would be this initiative, I assume, would take a while to pan out in terms of Android 12 devices and getting to the market and whatnot. But this is the goal. This is the dream almost, to encourage RCS adoption and to give Android a proper default iMessage competitor.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I don't even know. I don't even know. I mean, we're gonna have to wait and see if we hear more information about this. But it just, I mean, there have been so many things that have gotten in the way of, Android's ability to truly compete with, iOS in the messaging department. That's just been a thing for a while, and there have been things that have kept something like this from happening, Google's relationships with its partners being one, the European antitrust stuff being another factor. We've talked about this in depth on the show, and we'll for sure talk about it more in the future, but that's just, this is just a little bit of tidbit, and maybe this will spur on some more information that might come out in the coming weeks and months about what Google's doing with their messaging strategy. But that's just one crazy rumor we're hearing, and for all we know, it could be entirely false, but we're just going to leave that there and see what happens with it.
Can you talk about Google Meet now? I want to talk about Google Meet.
Yeah. What's up with Google Meet, besides the fact that Google is pushing it down the throats of every Gmail user?
Okay. Google, everybody's video conferencing. Google ordained Meet as their competitor, and therefore there seems to be a company-wide initiative to, or at least within the G Suite division, to put it everywhere. We've seen it in Calendar, in Gmail on the web, and now on Gmail for Android and iOS. So what's fascinating here is how they're doing it. On the web, it's just Google Meet exists in the sidebar. But on Gmail, there's no easy way to integrate it. So they're going to add a bottom bar to Gmail and access it as tabs. Have Mail as one tab and then have Google Meet as one tab. And it looks so clunky, because this is a bottom bar with just two items, Mail and a list of your upcoming Google Meet calls and the ability to quickly make a new one. So yeah, the implementation isn't elegant. Let's put it that way. At the moment, what they announced is not very elegant, and I don't know. It makes sense to push it with Gmail because people like Gmail for the most part. It is their very popular product that people have good feelings about. But what they're doing now is they're shoehorning Meets into Gmail, and it's not subtle whatsoever. yes, you can turn it off, but if this is a bad default experience when it starts rolling out.
Yeah, I mean, at least they're giving the opportunity to turn it off. I think that this really boils down to the Zoom effect. I think Google is probably really annoyed and frustrated that they did not get any of the surge of, or not any, but they definitely got some, but not as much of the surge of consumers using video conferencing tools with Google Meet as they would have hoped. And it seems like this is kind of just trying to compensate for that not having gone as well as planned. And now they're really trying to put this in front of as many eyeballs as possible and familiarize the name Google Meet with people. I don't know, like even 6 months ago, maybe even not 6 months, 3 months ago, I think the general perception, I mean, I don't know about you, but I talked to a lot of normal people about which video conferencing tools they were using and which ones they liked and which ones they, you know, were considering using and weighing. And what I heard a lot of was, oh yeah, Google Hangouts. Yeah, that's pretty old. It doesn't really work. It doesn't have as many features. Like that was what I heard from people about Google's offerings. All they called it Google Hangouts, and they knew it as that older, you know, video calling platform that is finally being retired soon, as users are quote unquote upgraded to Google Meet and Google Chat. So yeah, I think there was just a visibility and awareness problem for Google, and it's much easier and much cheaper for them to slap it in Gmail than it is for them to pay for tons of television advertisements, you know?
Yeah, so as an addendum to this, and this is me speculating, so earlier this year, back in January, there was this rumor that Google was going to announce a new communications app that bundles in Gmail, that bundles in Drive, that Meet and Chat. There was this rumor, and it hasn't materialized yet because Google hasn't had the opportunity to announce that any of their enterprise updates in a significant fashion. But from an APK insight of a previous version of Gmail and of the current version of Gmail, we spotted, in addition to this Meet integration, we also spotted Hangouts Chat integration and Google Tasks to a lesser degree. So imagine if the future of the Gmail app is you have email, you have Google Meet, and you also have Google Chat as three tabs, and you can browse around and communicate. What do you think of that as an experience for people? One app for all the different types of communication.
I think that Google's tried that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think Hangouts kind of tried to bundle a lot of these things. I think Google's trying
multiple occasions. But they didn't have the audacity to rope Gmail in, to rope their flagship productivity app in, and it looks like they might do that.
Yeah, I mean, for me personally, as someone who uses lots of Google products, I wouldn't mind having everything all in one place. You know, as a consumer, I don't think that I would really be bothered, but I think that there's reasons not to. I mean, obviously, yeah, there's developmental reasons and primarily, yeah, development. But I don't even know what to really think about this other than the fact that I find it pretty shameless. And I would guess that a lot of users are probably annoyed that Google is pushing their video calling software on them after the whole world has already apparently universally agreed upon Zoom as the winner of the video conferencing wars. Maybe if they had done this like two or three months ago, it might have had a greater, I guess, cost benefit ratio, right? Like the cost 3 months ago would have been the same, but the possible benefit would have been way bigger. And now it feels like too little too late for it to mean anything for Google. I just don't think it's being met much more than just annoying. Because Zoom seems to have picked up so much Traction. Of mind space and traction, yeah.
And yeah, it's good. It's not fun. It's functional, and that personally speaks to me.
Yeah, I have no problem with Meet. I like it. I actually like that it doesn't have a million toggles like Zoom does.
Yeah,
I don't know if you've used Zoom, but it's very much. It feels like a piece of software out of maybe, you know, like early 2000s, because it just, you know, it feels like a power tool. I don't know. Yeah. It feels like a Swiss Army knife. It's the Swiss Army knife of video conferencing tools, which it worked really well in Zoom's favor, because in the midst of the pandemic, the use cases and the reasons for needing video conferencing were far and wide. There's so many different reasons people were switching to video conferencing. And so, you need this to have a weekly video conference for your business. Oh, your church needs to stream this thing, or, you know, whatever, like all these different, you know, use cases, Zoom was able to be like, yeah, we've got a toggle for that. You know, if you need to do this, there's an option or a toggle for that. If you need to do that, you know, and so, and Meet still doesn't have that functionality. It really does hone in on focusing on meetings. And that's that. Let's see if got any last minute questions before we wrap up for the day. I think a lot of stuff we've already talked about. So I think we will just wrap the show there, call it a week, and we will have more for you next week, most likely. Yeah. So thanks for tuning in, everyone. Until next week, you can tune into Alphabet Scoop here every week. We record this podcast weekly, and you can find us on all your favorite podcasting platforms, such as iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Google Podcasts, and you can also listen directly over at 95google.com. Sorry for the abrupt end, but we've been on for well over an hour now. So thank you so much for tuning in. Thanks to Abner again for joining me, and we will see you hopefully next week if there's anything noteworthy to talk about.
Bye.